We got a big show for you today. We got a big show for you tomorrow. We got the our derby party on Saturday. It's just there's so much excitement around the Robicon show with Anna DeBlantis.
There really is.
Who can count? Now, unfortunately, I like to go to Arlington Park for Derby Day, but we're going to do our party down here. But they're still having a gigantic party at Arlington on Saturday. Howard, you didn't cancel it because I couldn't make it, right? That didn't happen?
Considered it strongly, but it was voted down. So the show will go on.
Okay.
How are you guys?
Hi,
couldn't be
Howard.
Better. Couldn't be better. All right. Now, I just want to, first of all, congratulations. We have another season at Arlington Park, the greatest horse racing facility, modern horse racing facility in the Western world. And it is, and I don't say that like, oh, I'm overstating it. I think that that's the consensus amongst people in the horse business. And it is a beautiful facility. It is a magnificent place to go. It is clean. It is family friendly, but it's also, you know, it's sexy enough for adults to be there. It couldn't be a better place to go spend an afternoon in the summer. Now, I got to say that this year is very special in the horse industry because it's the first year in decades that we would be looking for another Triple Crown winner. We finally had one after a very, very fallow 3 decades, almost 4 decades. And now here we go. We've got some really incredible horses are going to be racing on Saturday, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the last time that we had a Triple Crown winner before American Pharoah was when Affirmed won in 1978, and that made it a back-to-back because Seattle Slough won it the year before.
Right.
In the 70s, there were a lot of them. Of course, Secretariat won in 73. And you're right, it is a great field. It's a field of 20. 9 of them won their last race. So you really have to just figure out which race you like the best out of them and look at their consistency. And you can make a case for a lot of them, and that's the Kentucky Derby.
Mm-hmm. How often does the front runner win, or the favorite in the race? How often do we see that? I mean, roughly, is it quite often? Is it a lot of, all the time?
1 in 10 times.
1 in 10.
Probably right.
For the Derby.
So last
year, American Pharoah won. He was a lukewarm favorite at that point. That was the last time he got a decent price on him. I think he paid 7 something, so he was 5-2, but. You know, it so much has to go right to win the Kentucky Derby. That's why the odds are against any one horse or against the favorite, because there are 20 horses. Your post position has something to do with it. You've got to get the right trip, which means that with 20 horses in the race, it's real easy to get blocked. You can get parked out wide where you lose ground going around the turn. So anything can happen to go wrong.
Now, and it's interesting because in a regular race, it's about the favorites win about a third of the time. Like like on average.
So not the Derby, a regular race.
No. The Derby is a very different animal because it is, as Howard's pointing out, it's such a crowded field. And it's a cavalry charge, right? I mean, they all come out of the gate, and as Howard's describing, they're moving. They're trying to jockey for position. And when you've got 18 horses, I think, right? Is it 18 in this?
20.
You've got, that's a lot of movement. Now, my guess is that you're going to see a few scratches. Between
possibly they're
now and Saturday,
one or two, but we'll see. They all want to take their shot. It's the only chance you get to win the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, that's
your horse is 3.
Right.
The other factor that I didn't bring up is, you know, none of them have run a mile and a quarter, so you don't know if they can go that last eighth of a mile. They've run a mile and an eighth, most of them, so the distance is a factor. Another factor is you've got 160,000 people around there, so they can freak out in the paddock or when they come onto the track or when they turn for home and they hear that roar. So there are a lot of factors that make the Derby really unique.
That's a very interesting point because horse trainers, you know, you work on that. There's no way in training and in breezing and the things that they have to do to get a horse ready to run on the track, there's no way that you can teach them how to react to different sized crowds. Now, generally, when these horses that all started when they were 2-year-olds started racing, there are some larger crowds that they're going to be in front of, whether they're at Gulfstream down in Florida or at Keeneland in Kentucky or Santa Anita. Sometimes you get a big crowd, but you're never going to get a sound like you're going to get at the Kentucky Derby. It's a wall of sound. And
well, yeah, with 60,000 people, and they've all had 5.325 mint juleps by that point, so they're really going to be loud. So
you got to pace yourself. Those mint juleps are so delicious. I got to tell you, you drink them one time a year, but that, wow, you got to be careful.
Oh, that is for
sure. Strong.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, we're not messing around with that. I mean, we will at our thing, but it is what it is. I guess, and to me, it's so exciting because Kentucky Derby, whatever horse here comes out on top, and there's a couple of. There have been a lot of storylines this year. There's a horse named Nyquist, who is
the favorite, right? Nyquist.
He is currently the favorite. He'll go off as the favorite too. That's not going to change, I don't think. But Nyquist had a very convincing win in the Florida Derby against Mohyman is what I always want to call him. Mohyman, who is another considered to be super horse. That was in this, but did not run particularly a great race. But a lot of people now like this Exaggerator.
That's where I'm going. Although I'll change my mind two or three times by the time I get to the gate on Saturday. But you mentioned Nyquist, the favorite. Hard to knock him. He's 7-for-7. Never lost a race. Perfect. Mohyman that you talked about. He ran a bad race last time in the Florida Derby. He was undefeated before that, so he could certainly bounce back. But Exaggerator, I think he's going to love the distance. He's won 4 times, very consistent. He's run 9 times in his career, and he's been first, second, or third in 7 of those races, so he's very consistent. One thing that I'm a little concerned about him is he ran on a wet track at Santa Anita last time in the Santa Anita Derby, and that means he could have moved up. He could really love the slop, which his form shows. There might have been 3 or 4 or 5 legitimate horses in the race that didn't like the track that day. So while he was impressive, don't know how impressive that actually was. But I think he's going to run well.
Well, we're being told. We had a little bit of inside knowledge here. You know, as Howard spent enough time in and around tracks his entire career.
I bet there's a lot of inside knowledge, so-called inside knowledge.
When I used to work at Channel...
Not so much.
Well, that people think they know.
Right.
And they give you a bet on a horse, or they tell you, this is the horse you need right here.
You probably
hear that, but even though it's not always necessarily reliable.
A lot of rail rumors that take, and you hear, you know, there's trainers talking and groomsmen and all the rest of the people who work around the horses, and then they all whisper to each other in that weird horse speak that they all talk.
I'm sure I would not understand.
Yeah, you don't. You know, but it's great. But Exaggerator apparently is working very, very well.
Well, the great Eddie Olczyk talked about Exaggerator right before the Santa Anita race you were talking about,
yes.
Howard, and he said he was his pick, so he liked him.
And they say of Exaggerator has a lot of bottom, which is exactly what...
What does that mean?
That is not what you think it means. That means he's got more distance in him. That means that at the end of the race, he could still run another quarter. You know, he doesn't seem to be winded. His stride seems to still be lengthy and strong as he's finishing the race. So that's one of the conversations that people are having about that horse right now. And I think
I just look at the names mostly when I'm picking. I mean, it seems like you can go so deep on this, can't you? In order to figure out which horse you're going for and how
Howard.
You want to bet. And oh my gosh.
Well, sure. And then your betting strategy is a whole nother animal when you get into this thing as Roe knows. You can have the horse that wins the race, but then you got to figure out who's going to run second, third, or fourth if you really want to cash and have a big hit in the race. But, you know, picking them by their names, that's the only way you're going to hit a 50-to-1 shot. So there's nothing wrong with that.
And there have been
50-to-1 shots win.
Yes, we've seen 50-to-1 shots win the Mind That Bird.
Win the Derby.
Yep. We've seen, and actually in the Belmont, that's the one where you always take. I always bet the 50 and 60-to-1 shots in the Belmont because that's the distance that nobody knows they can run, mile and a half. And that's also a wall of sound. Last year at the Belmont, and I was just so blessed to be there, it's the loudest I've ever heard anything, ever, when American Pharoah made that turn and was 3, 4, 5 and increasing lengths ahead. It was deafening.
Louder than the concert where you were deaf after? What concert was
that
again?
That was the Earth, Wind, and Fire
Earth,
in
Wind,
Chicago
and Fire.
Show,
yeah, you came back and you couldn't hear. We're like, row!
Hearing aid
you
shows,
had no
we
idea.
Call it. Now I do. There's a couple of the. You know what, Howard? I'm going to give you another tip. You want another tip?
Sure.
Since we're sitting here,
I'm always looking for tips.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll listen, but
Brody's Cause.
Yes.
Brody's Cause. Watch that horse.
He could do it.
Yep.
He gets better as they go longer. I think he's going to finish strong, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Wouldn't shock me at all. He's one of the ones I have circled. With Brody's Cause and Exaggerator, they come from well behind. So mm-hmm. you've got to have some racing luck.
Right.
They're going to be back a little bit. So they got to weave their way through and get a break. Another horse to look at is Mo Tom. Mo Tom has had horrible racing luck his last two races. And you make your own luck when you come from behind. You know, you're putting yourself in a position to have that happen. But he got smashed on the rail his last two races, or I think he may have won both of them. So he's going to be a decent price, and he wouldn't shock me.
Right. And Gunrunner is another one that I think people
should be. And Gunrunner, yeah. The horse that beat him down in Louisiana. So I think that, Gunrunner is another one. He's 10-1 on the morning line. I think he'll probably go off somewhere in that range.
So the unusual names for horses, and there are really unusual ones as we've seen, is that due to the fact that you can't name a horse something that's already been named before? Or why does it seem to field these very original names?
Well, there are a lot of rules. Ro, you have horses, and you know the process you go through. You have to register with the jockey club. You can only use 18 characters in the race. You can't name them after a person, a living person, unless you get written permission. And then a lot of times they combine the sire, the father, and the mother of the horse, the names. There are a lot of horses that will be named after their owner. Out at Arlington, there are a lot of Richie horses because there's an owner named Rich Raven. So they name a lot of them Richie. So there are some unique names, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And then the reason that you get things, these funny names, is because of that whole sire piece. The dads are very important in terms of, because great breeding makes great horses. Very rarely does a not well-bred horse succeed, and they generally don't succeed for a very long time. They may win a race here or there, but you know, at races like this, where you have the best of the best, these are all very well bred, and that's basically a dog whistle to people who know to look at the racing form and go, that must be an Uncle Mo, for example. This Mo Tom is an Uncle Mo. Uncle Mo's got a couple of horses in this race that he was the sire of, and he's a very hot sire right now. So that's the.
So you want that in the name.
I think, especially for sales purposes, because people then know automatically what they're dealing with, mm-hmm. right?
The breeding, it doesn't always hold up, though. California Chrome, that won the Derby and the Preakness, he was very modestly bred. He just won the world's richest race over in Dubai a couple of months ago. Mind That Bird, I think he was sold for $9,500 as a yearling.
Right.
Well,
we knew.
There are exceptions.
Mind That Bird, there's no question about that. But Mind That Bird is actually pretty well bred. Mind That Bird came off the farm that we work out of. And that was, just the point, I think the most important point is that if you are going to pick a name, pick the wackiest name. That is the most, I think
it helps
that's
get,
it.
Draw bettors?
The bettors.
It's just fun?
Yeah, it's just fun. It's fun, or numbers or colors. I don't think you can go wrong with any of that. If you don't know what you're doing, you got as good a shot as anybody. Howard knows what he's doing with betting more than I do. I can tell you that right now, because I used to watch Howard at Channel 2 when he was working at the sports department at Channel 2.
Sure.
And they would turn the CBS satellites away from the breaking news happening around the world, and they would watch tracks all over North America back before there was the internet and all of that.
Wow.
And Johnny Morris, who's maybe to my one of the great handicappers of all times.
So
Better, and Gene Siskel was part of it.
Yeah.
He loved the horses, so that's no lie. We did that every night. We still got the sports on the air, but we didn't miss any races.
No.
So it's a passion for you, but where did that come from, Howard? I'm always interested in that.
My dad was a trainer. They were mostly cheap horses, but it didn't matter when we, you know, won and got to go to the winner's circle. It was really cool. So
cool.
He did it more as a hobby. So I've been around the backstretch of the racetrack for my entire life. And then at CBS back in the 80s, I did live shows from Arlington. We did the feature race every Saturday. So
yep,
I have a long history at Arlington, too. But it's been in my blood.
That's great.
It is. It's such a fun sport. It is. It's amazing. And again, this summer, go out to Arlington and take advantage of this jewel, crown jewel of racing in the world.
I'm always struck by how family friendly it is. I love that part.
It is a family place. And you're speaking of breeding. We have some well-bred other animals that are going to be racing this weekend, guys. Listen to this. Between every race, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're going to have ostrich, zebra, and camel races. Now, handicap those, Ro.
You know,
that sounds so fun.
Yeah, I'd like to do ostrich steeplechase. I'm going to try that and see what happens.
Wait, do you ride an ostrich?
All right, so Howard, we got to run. We're way late here. Thank you very much, Howard. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Howard.
All right, go out to Arlington. If you're not coming to our party, go out to Arlington this Saturday for the Kentucky Derby or watch it on the TV. Our old friend Eddie Olchek will be doing the calling part of it for you.